I presupposed that here we'd be able not to engage in some scientific or pedagogical activities, or especially in educational activities, but we'd do something very different. We should try to communicate, because I think that people from my domain do not often visit you here, and surely, as I can often make sure of it, that somewhere there, deep in one's soul, there is an unsettling question. Every day we get up, then we go to work, then we come back from work and go to bed, then we get up and go over the same thing again, and then we over and over again. What are we doing it for? And then they say that the person is, I don't want to say this word even, and then a person disappears. And what was all of it for? Sometimes this question occurs to everybody. Sometimes these thoughts or ideas get to our conscience. Sometimes they are subconscious, but they are pressuring us to answer them. And indeed, if we don't solve this issue, we do not know how we should regard a human being. We know about the way animals live, of course. They do not ask themselves, what am I living for? What is the purpose of all the work I do? They are just getting their food and that's it. But when it comes to a human being, the situation is different here. A person can't help thinking about it. I remember Ганкур brothers have some very interesting recollections and thoughts about Эмиль Золя saying, when I am moving to a new apartment, the first thing I'm thinking about is where my casket will be carried out. Wow, how scary. We'd rather not speak about it. But when Turgenev was asked a question, what is your reaction to the thoughts of the kind? Ivan Sergeyevich's answer was quite simple. Such thoughts do occur to me, but I make them go away. I don't want to think about it. Great, isn't it? They say the ostrich also hides its head in the sand in the face of danger, in face of something that is inevitable. So, of course, the issue of the sense of our life and work is, but not in the sense meaning to have something to eat and drink tomorrow and to provide for ourselves and our children. It is obvious, but this is not the sense, but just one of the tasks in our life. We are talking about a different thing. What is the sense of my life and work in general? Though I heard that in the past, even before Perestroika, I used to read many interesting things, I subscribed for a lot of literature, including the magazines Science and Religion, Questions of Philosophy, and so on, there I read that people work in order to provide for themselves, of course, as well as for the benefit of society and ultimately of all the humanity. Everything seems to be justified. But what did the science do? It did something terrible. Suddenly it declared, and here I mean the most outstanding scientists of the world, that we can't hope to work for the benefit of the humanity, because the humanity as a biological species is mortal in the same way as everything biological is, and its death will happen not somewhere in the faraway future, according to our outstanding academician Моисеев. I think you know him. So not somewhere in the faraway future, but somewhere in the middle of the 21st century. Oh my God, it is not getting any better. Couldn't it just happen a million years later? It would be just great. But in the middle of the 21st century, can you imagine it? And these are the words of a scientist who, by the way, didn't believe in God. I wanted to get acquainted with him so much, but unfortunately I didn't make it in time. Having read his book, I realized that he was a very clever man and an outstanding scientist. Of course, his anniversaries were celebrated in the Academy of Sciences in a very solemn way, and suddenly he was writing such things. He was thinking about the sense of a human life, of every particular person and of the humanity in general. What does a person live for? In this book, when I speak of it, I ask, have you read The God of Osipov? And people ask, what God of Osipov? And I say, oh, you just read Evgeny Onegin by Pushkin. So I started this book with the amazing words by Alexander Sergeyevich Pushkin. Fruitless gift at random handed, life of mine, what was your aim? Else, why had some fate intended for death row to be my claim? Dull, I bear my blind existence, empty heart and quiescent mind, and I drag along the distance of this life's insipid grind. Insipid grind it is indeed. The same all over again. And time, everyone complains of time, heaven speeded up, that we have no time, a year has started and it's over already. So, as I already said, perhaps we should talk about this question, because it is very important for every person. We can't help coming across it. So why and what for? So let's just think about it, and I will talk about it, and then you will do the same. And I'm asking you to put the worst questions in the world here and to bring them up, because the worse the questions are, the more interesting our discussion will be. So basically, there are just two principal answers to the question of the sense of our life. Just two principal answers. There is one viewpoint that is quite obvious for everybody, but they are actually both quite obvious for everybody. To put it short and without any details, they are as follows. One of these viewpoints claims that everything appeared randomly in the first place. We don't know how, but the universe exists eternally. And if not eternally, there was this big bang when it appeared from one point and started developing, and later on everything developed, not just space, but just life and people. How did it happen? It happened for reasons we do not know of, and according to the laws we don't know of. So we are nothing else but just a natural consequence of this process. So what is claimed here? That's why something doesn't exist. God doesn't exist. There is no greater mind. There is no soul in a person. It was just made up. It doesn't exist. We live just once. Someone is happy and they are successful and pretty in this life and healthy, but someone was born, you know, forgotten, neglected, was born a slave, or not healthy, or anything else. So it happened. And what is the sense of their existence? Nobody knows of him. So how many people are known to someone? Just some single personalities compared to the myriads of people who lived on Earth, and the rest are just rubbish and nothing else. As the rest of the beings, they appear, flourish, die, and get rotten, and that's it. So the sense of life is unbelievable here. To appear from nowhere and to go on into nowhere, into eternal death that awaits for every person. I don't know about you, but I think you can't even make up a more tragic, worldview. It is so pessimistic, this eternal death and nothing else. But this is generally speaking. But if we look at it from the standpoint of a different opinion, if we take a look at our morals, what our morals should be and in the name of what? If I live once and everybody lives once and we all will disappear, then I'm sorry. What morals are we talking about? Once, in the beginning of the 20th century, a very famous poet and philosopher Dmitry Merezhkovsky wrote, "Both good and evil are two ways that go to the same aim, so it doesn't matter which one to undertake." Isn't this great? I wonder if he was put on a hot frying pan, he would just jump up and say, "Wow, it's not the same if you sit in a comfortable armchair or on a hot frying pan. I think these are two different things. So our skin knows better than us when it comes to what is good and what is evil, and if it is the same, and if they go to the same aim or not. This is just unbelievable intuition." So a person always says, "It can't be true. It's unbelievable that I communicated with this person and now they don't exist anymore. They disappeared. This personality doesn't exist anymore." Especially when it comes to the closest people and the people we love most. But if there is no God and there is no eternal life and there is no soul and a personality is something very vague and, it's something that will just fall apart when our body dies. So what are the morals? What is the sense? What is the ultimate sense of a person's life? I don't want to speak about some life tasks and problems. They are always there, but they are here today and tomorrow they don't exist, and I'm here today and tomorrow I don't exist. So what is the sense of it? I can't imagine something more pessimistic than this. I'm saying, if somewhere there was some idea when they said for the benefit of humanity, it was a lie, of course, but still. But skeptics always existed. They said, "What do you want us just to be the manure for the next generations? We are working right now, we're trying to work in every 5 years. We have some plans and we are doing this for upcoming generations, but why are they better than us? and why should we do this? So, you know, there are so many questions, and there is a very difficult question that is connected with this despair when I'm given the eternal death as an ideal and the sense of life. Thank you very much, but I can't accept it. There is another viewpoint, or maybe it's more of a conviction, a deep conviction, that admits higher intelligence that was called differently, but in the long run, there is such a word, God, which is the higher intelligence that is the source of all that exists, and there are many grounds to believe so. The most curious thing is that all the thorough historical researches which had been held, especially as the atheistic epoch was gradually coming up, starting even from the 18th century and especially in our country, at the epoch of socialism, the most thorough historical researches and were conducted, and they were looking for what? For at least one irreligious tribe, and they didn't find a single one. History has no evidence of such tribes. No one has ever seen anything like this anywhere, despite all the researches that had been undertaken. Nothing helped. It is just amazing. It turns out that all the humanity, at least in the lapse of time accessible for the historical research, all the humanity has always recognized God, gods, it doesn't matter here. If there are more than one or one is a different matter, but the bottom line is that everyone and all the time believed in God. And Cicero wrote about this. I have it in this book. If I find, I will quote to you, but it doesn't matter. If you get interested, you will read it. It is very, very interesting. So from the very beginning and up to the present time, that's what is curious. And when they started saying that religion only existed because people were incapable of explaining some scary natural phenomena like thunder, earthquake, lightning, or they couldn't explain the beautiful views, how could it have appeared? It's clear that someone should have created it. So it's clear it's ignorance. And they thought there is God. But when they came to the 20th century, and when suddenly numerous scientists, the most outstanding stars of science, declared to believe in God, people got puzzled. So what, are they so ignorant? There is a story, I'm not sure if it's real, but perhaps it is. In St. Petersburg, there was our academician Pavlov, an old man with a beard. He was walking and passing by the church. He crossed himself, bowed, and on the opposite side there was a sailor walking and thinking, oh, such ignorance. So, you know how smart a sailor is. So there is a faith in non-existence of God. What is this faith grounded on? What are the grounds for the faith in non-existence of God? You know, if you touch this question, you'd be amazed at how limited the thought and ideas are. Why there is no God? And who saw him? Once in seminary, I come from Sergiev Posad, and there is Lavra, and there is an academy. And at Soviet times, I remember there was a group of tourists who came up, they were so educated, and asked, who saw God? And they were answered, and so what? If you didn't see God, it means He doesn't exist? Of course. Did you see God? And did you see your own mind? And suddenly the whole crowd burst out laughing. So you didn't see your own mind? It means it doesn't exist? How logical it is? Did you see a flea? Did you see an electron? Did you see the strings or quantum or something else? It is ridiculous. Almost everything the science tells us about, just a small group of researchers sees, and that's it. And the rest of us, we just believe that indeed there are black holes. So who saw them, I wonder? It is ridiculous. Who saw God? Indeed, how can you see a spirit? How can you see beauty? How can you see a thought? How can you see it? We see the manifestation of it when it embodies. So Pythagoras called the universe cosmos. So what is it? It means beauty. It's a Greek word. So women know the Greek language perfectly well because they use the cosmetics. But men sometimes do not know. So Pythagoras said it is beauty because he was amazed. So who saw God? As if God is some sort of an object. We saw very few things, but we see the manifestations of it. We don't see the mind, but by someone's actions we can tell if it's a smart person or a fool. Or there are many contradictions in the Bible, but it is ridiculous. Okay, let it be. Perhaps. It is not so, it's a different matter. But okay, there are many contradictions in the Bible. But why God doesn't exist? So what does it have to do with it? So then it means that people who believe the Bible are mistaken, but what does it have to do with God? So science is against religion. It's ridiculous. What should we do with the scientists who believe in God? So what? The sailor was right when he thought Pavlov to be ignorant. So I'm just saying it in short and giving some ideas of mine. But indeed, atheism is an amazing faith. Why is it amazing? Because it has absolutely no grounds. There is an absence of logic. And when they say that, how can we find out if there is God or not? How can you find out if there is a wolf in the forest or not? So one person saw it, two people, three people, 10 people who have nothing to do with each other. So we should verify. And having verified, if you didn't find it, still, it can be there, but you haven't noticed it. So, when we put the question, what should we do to make sure there is no God? This question once I put to the head of the Institute of Scientific Atheism. He was a PhD, and I said, could you please help me? Because students ask me, and I'm not a specialist in atheism, so please help me. What should an educated person do to make sure there is no God? There was no answer. So should I take up science? There are many scientists who believe in God. So I said, you couldn't answer, and I will answer. And he said, so how can I make sure? And I said, well, you should attend a hard rock concert. So he laughed. So there's a different question. Okay, how can I make sure there is God? Is there a way to make sure that there is God? Are there any grounds? Prove there is God. You know, this question, prove there is God. It's like a theorem. You know, God is not a mathematic idea to prove it mathematically. But if we put this question, please prove that there is God. What should we do? We should explain what it means to explain that something or someone exists. What does it mean to prove existence? There are two ways to do it. There are two major ways to do it. So either I have to believe those who saw this, who claim to have seen it for sure. I see that these people are worthwhile and I can trust them or not. Or in the science, the theory is considered correct if it has facts. And secondly, there is a way to verify of what this theory claims. How can we verify? We can say anything, and I can believe anything, any statue or anything. How can we verify? So religion, unlike atheism, offers, first of all, facts, numerous, unbelievable facts, which you can't explain in any scientific terms. Amazing facts. And secondly, religion offers ways of verification. So how can we verify what the religion claims? Can we make sure there is God? The religion says you can and you should, because you can't just lose your life to make it fruitless, this short life of yours. Of course, you should make sure, and the religion offers many people who were afraid to lie even in thoughts, who are called saints, who claimed that they didn't just believe that there is God, but they claimed to know there is God. It turns out there is an opportunity for a person to feel God in the same way as we can ask, is there love? So what is it? Is it a fantasy? It is rubbish. But a person who knows what love is indeed, they will tell, maybe you have a stiff heart or you have never come across love. But love is the best thing there is in our earthly life. It is something you can give everything for. There are many noble actions done for it, and many crimes as well. It turns out it is the reality, the manifestations of which are often distinctly felt by the society, by the world, by a family, and so on. So it turns out it is the reality and the real fact. And if you live it in your heart, in your soul, it will be your way of verification. There is a way of verification. That's the thing the religion constantly talks about. A person, if you want to find out if there is God, well, you should become at least a little bit like him, because, as they say, like is cured by the like. So God, you will get to know God if you become like God in His qualities. Which are these qualities? What do you need, first of all, to make sure there is God? What? First of all, a person should realize at long last and to feel sharply the question that somehow I live and I don't know what I live for. At any moment my life can come to an end. So what do I live for? And secondly, a person should feel that I'm not the person that I should be. So I'm not a hypocrite, and do I never lie? Do I never envy? Am I never greedy? And so on. I don't even want to enumerate all of it. So I feel that I'm not who I should be. And this bothers me a lot, that I'm not who I should be. You know, people often commit crimes because of these things. They steal, lie, murder, and many different things. So I'm not who I should be, and it is essential for a person to feel that they are not who they should be. A person feels it, that I should be like this. You know, we admire so much when we meet some noble person, you know, pure person with high morals, a person who's ready to sacrifice, and unwillingly we just tend to like this person with our soul, because the feeling that I'm not the person who I should be and that I should find the sense of my life, these are two necessary conditions which are essential for me to start on a way to get to know God. What is this way? In order to get to know God, it is necessary to reject and renounce all the bad things that I did or I'm still doing. So in church terminology, it is called repentance. In Greek, it means metanoia, which means the change. The inner change of a person when they renounce all these bad things and want to undertake the real way of morality, which is indicated in the Christian teaching about a person or just in the gospel, the commandments of gospel. So there is nothing bad you can find in these commandments. On the contrary, they ask us to be merciful, to avoid all the evil, to be noble. So why do people reject these great things? You know, love, mercy. What bad is there? Why is it so often rejected? So we should embark on this way. And if you do something wrong, then you repent. It turns out that a person who indeed makes a decision to live in this due way, it turns out that very soon this person will make sure that there is God. Do you see? Not some fantasies or ideas. So no, God forbid, because Christianity actually strictly forbids all these dreams about different high states or whatever. So no, it is strict and real human life, and Christianity offers a way. What is the proof of it? The proof of it are the facts and a real way of verification of what Christianity claims. From the Christian viewpoint, this is called a proof, because existence of God is not some theoretical problem or not some geometrical or mathematical problem or physical problem. No, it is a problem of existence. So here a person should embark on this way, meaning that a person should conduct an experiment, and a person should conduct an experiment in the due way. Not like people often say, I'm orthodox, and, you know, they do anything they wish and just put candles and lie. So, and the more you steal, the thicker is the candle that you put in church. Oh, it is so great, you can't even think of anything better. So the recognition of God and the existence of a soul, of my soul as an immortal substance, and recognition of the fact that a personality is immortal, and not just immortal, but a personality is aimed at the eternal life, and not just at this short-term life where we are right now. So the recognition of God's existence and eternity, and the recognition of the moral responsibility for all our actions, not in front of the court, but in face of the truth itself, that's what gives a person the understanding of sense of their life indeed. So here indeed the sense of our life becomes clear, because when I'm asleep there is no sense to my life, and if the death is eternal, and if a personality dies and stops its existence, it means there is no sense, because there can only be sense when I'm able to live and morally evaluate my actions in the face of the truth. So Christianity indicates the ideal and the sense of a person's life. There is an image that is a sort of an example that indeed we are more immortal personalities. The example is the caterpillar. You know, suddenly it dies. And it seems that this is it. The caterpillar died. Did it? But sometime later, this caterpillar flies out as a beautiful butterfly. How beautiful this image is, and it is an image of our human existence. We are not animals that die together with our body. We are people, personalities who get born into eternity. We get born into eternity, and we don't fall apart into ashes together with our bodies. So this eternity, according to Christianity, is offered to a person as the perfection of life. What is this perfection? When they say paradise or the kingdom of heaven, when I don't think we understand what it is. I mean, what is it? It is unclear. On the contrary, when Christianity claims that the sense of a human life is the full unity with God, who is love, and that the sense of a human life and the aim of the human life and the good or the goodness of existence of a person is the sense of life, as God is love, and they who are in love are in God and God is in them, because God is the Spirit. If a person felt at least to some extent love in this earthly life, they will be able to understand which greater good awaits for a person, which is the life in God, who is love, who is full of, this life will be full of love. And of course this love is eternal, and It is so much more perfect than all our feelings on earth. So here are two ideals, but I don't want to talk about ideals, it's too high flown. I mean two senses of life that a person faces. Either you believe there is eternal death, or there is eternal life. You know, just the medical literature that describes some of the people who survived the clinical death. And I can tell you about the case that happened to my neighbor. My neighbor was just a regular person, you know, like the most regular man you can ever find. And he once fell ill when he was young. So there was temperature, high temperature, he was at hospital. And he even gave me a notification because I asked him to put it down. And he said, I was lying on my bed and suddenly I see that I am standing and I am looking at myself. And then I recalled, I wonder where are my friends? And suddenly I turn up next to them. Momentarily, I come up to them, and it was the 1st of May, and they were drinking something and eating, talking. I try to talk to them, and they can't hear me, and my hands just go through them, and all my attempts didn't end up successfully. And suddenly I recalled of one acquaintance of mine. I turned up next to her and I saw her sitting on a bench with another young man and having a nice conversation. And here I tried to break into this conversation and I didn't succeed either. And suddenly I recalled that I am at hospital. I'm running a high temperature. And suddenly I turned up in my hospital room, and what I see, my bed, and there's me on it, and next to me there's a doctor standing and two nurses, and I hear the doctor say, he is dead, he died. And you can take his body to the mortuary. It wasn't morgue yet, but to the mortuary. And he says, when I heard it, suddenly I felt terrible cold. And I hear the cry, he's alive. I woke up, they are standing next to me. On the same day, I was no longer running a high temperature and I could leave the hospital and go home, but I decided to check. So when I returned home, I visited my friends and asked, how did you celebrate the 1st of May? And I mentioned some of the things they spoke about, and those were the 30s years, and the things they were talking about, they were not so good. You could have got punished for those things. And they stared at me, how do you know? And then I went to the girl, she blushed when I said that I saw it. So, what do I want to say? So, this means those were not some visions or dreams, but this is a real fact indeed. He was one of them, indeed. He was there, it turns out. What is it? This is a religious fact. This is the fact that confirms that a person has a soul. And a soul can exist outside the body, and consequently it can exist without body. There are numerous facts of the kind, and there's a lot of literature like life after death, afterlife, and so on, and there are many interesting facts provided by doctors who say that not everybody or the overwhelming majority do not want to speak about it. They say, we didn't see anything and don't want to talk about it, but many do want to tell what they saw there. And there's an amazing case when there are people who intended to commit suicide come back, and what they say, they told about the sufferings they had there. Those were terrible sufferings. One girl yelled, "Save me!" So she actually yelled and asked to get saved from this terrible state that she endured there. So, you know, if someone really wants to think about the sense of life, I think they would read this literature and get acquainted with this literature and find out to what extent they can trust it. And there are many other facts, and a person will consider the grounds to accept that there is God. The members of the Russian Academy of Science, Bekhtereva, who was the head of the Brain Institute, she became so religious from being an atheist. She said that without the recognition of the higher intelligence, it is impossible even to imagine how such a thing as a person's brain could have appeared. It is something unbelievable in terms of its complexity and its opportunities and potentials. So it is amazing, and it is impossible even to imagine this. How many people of the kind there are who came to the recognition of God's existence via science? And here we can see the sense of a person's life. It's not for nothing, Dostoevsky said, only with the recognition of immortality of our soul, we can understand all the reasonable sense on earth. Only with the recognition of this, Dostoevsky was a very smart person indeed. I'm just quoting him, but indeed there are many people who came to this and spoke of such things. So a smart person can't help thinking about it. They can't just come to terms with this routine, senseless routine of days and nights and years, and after all, the end of life. So they have to think about it, that there are all the grounds to believe there is God. The huge experience of humanity, the huge experience of those who church calls to be saints, who were afraid even to allow lie in thoughts. And why can we accept their thoughts and words? For a very simple reason, because of their actions. So here I mean the miracles. Those of you who visited St. Petersburg, of course you heard about St. Ksenia from St. Petersburg, or St. Nicholas, not just Christians, but Muslims, and many other people turned to him. St. John from Kronstadt, there are volumes written about what he did. Is it a coincidence? So what power they had? They said they did it with God's power and not their own. They were not extrasenses, but they were the saints. So The sciences where there are facts, there is no science without facts, and the religion has a huge number of facts confirming existence of another world, of a God's existence of a soul, and the religion calls to what sort of life? Can you imagine? Why do we suffer? Why do we have so many problems? Why do we have a crisis? This crisis has an anthropogenic character. What are we coming up to and why? Because there is a fall of the human morale. Why is this fall happening? Because I live just once. Take everything from life you can take. And I don't care about anyone. I wonder how people didn't come up to, you know, adding themselves new stomachs in order to eat more. So it's ridiculous. You know, you are full, you don't want to eat, and you don't care about anything else. So how senseless it is. And this actually breaks and destructs the religious worldview, and it comes to some terrible results. Do you remember Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky? This is an amazing movie when John Karamazov talks to a demon and says, if there is no God, then I can do anything I wish. Of course. So, of course, so if you're happy enough just to go through your life and not to be caught, sure, if there is no God, there is no responsibility, hooray! So this is one of the greatest wake-up calls for us. Why is there atheism? Because atheists don't want to hold responsibility for what they do, so they are happy. We can do anything we wish, and our life can be so-called free. But just let's take a look what our life turns into. And it's not just in Russia, but in the West as well. So everywhere, you know, there is this percentage of non-religious people that is growing. So I got acquainted with the statistics in England, in other countries. You know, in Czech Republic, it's like 70% of people who do not care about religion. So you see how shallow our conscience becomes. Because please tell me, why do you believe there is no God? Please tell me why. I will tell you why I believe there is God. Please tell me why you don't believe there is God. I just don't want to believe. I want to hide my head in sand from the inevitable death. How amazing this is. You can't think of anything better. I'm sorry that I'm talking about these things. I don't doubt that some of you believe there is God, and I'm ready to talk to you with those people. Of course, we're all people, and we can make mistakes, and there are many mistakes even in religion. There are many fanatics, many stupid people, there are many superstitious people. I mean, that God doesn't even want to know what these people believe in. So there are many pseudo-religious opinions, but I think that still a smart person should think about the main things in their life, because the life is going on and we can't stop the clock. You know, it would be great to stop the clock, but we can't do it. Do you remember Goethe? Faust said, please, the moment stop. But, alas, you can't stop a moment, and we are all going to the same end. I always say, other people are dying, and I will never die. I will always live. Of course, I know that I will die someday, but I don't believe it. And I live as an immortal person. Do you see how smart I am? So I'm just amazed at how smart I am. So I know and I don't believe. So it is amazing. You see what kind of a conversation we've had. I'm sorry for talking to you so long, and I hope that you will tell me something interesting as well, and you will raise some questions for our meeting to be more of a dialogue than of a monologue. I think you're tired of all these lectures, because me personally, I'm dead tired of all these conferences and reports, and I always think, when will he end, you know, this dragging out of this report? So I judge by myself, and I'm sorry that you had to listen to all of it.
Okay.
Thank you for attention, for your patience. Thank you. And I would be just happy if we could communicate at long last, okay? Like a dialogue. We all work in the banking sphere, and like no one else, we are interested in the following. What about money? Oh, come on, can you hear it? Money again. I just talked, criticized, and here comes money again. Okay, go on. I would like to know your opinion and the opinion of orthodoxy about money and its existence. It's not about money, it's about our attitude to it. It is a double-edged sword. I can protect with it and I can attack with it. I can do good or evil. It all depends on our attitude to money. Christianity believes it to be a sin only if. But let me first tell you what a sin is. A sin is something that hurts a person. If I envy someone, I suffer. He may be swimming in the Red Sea, watching fish, but I'm sick with envy. I wonder how happy I am. So this is a bright example of a sin. So everything that Christianity calls a sin is something that hurts a person, that kills a person. When I hate, who suffers? He whom I hate, or myself. Of course, I suffer. So when I steal, I harm myself, and it doesn't matter if it will be found out here in this life. Well, thank God, I will suffer a little bit for this evil and I will get cured. But God forbid if I go to the next life and then in face of all the truth and in front of everybody, I will have to bear this shame. So a sin is a wound that I caused to myself. But Christianity digs deeper than usual. So we usually consider a sin to be what? To steal, to burglar, to murder, to cheat on someone, and, well, I don't know anything else. If I don't do any of it, I'm a saint. That's enough. Is it so? It is so shallow. Christianity says if you judge someone, what does it mean when you judge someone? It just means that you believe yourself to be higher than them. So you're so good in your own eyes. Oh my God. You're so good. I'm not like him or like her. I wouldn't do it, but I hide that I did things of the kind, but I will never tell anyone for no one to see. Any sin is a wound that I caused to myself. If only people knew it, if only we knew this real fact that everything that is called a sin is like a blast or something that hurts us. So money. Money in itself is something impassionate, as it seems. But when it becomes the aim of my life, you know, the American author Hill wrote, you might remember, he wrote, make money and get rich. So he wrote that you will never get rich if you don't develop a passion to money. Only the passion to money will make you rich. Maybe I'm misquoting a little bit. So make money and get rich. So the book was sold. It was a bestseller in the United States. There were 42 editions like 5 or 6 years ago, and I don't know how many of them there are now. You will never get rich if you don't develop your passions up to insanity. So here, money is something terrible. 1 billionaire is being fed, you know, like what? He had a throat cancer, and his throat was cut, and they give him little by little inside, and he has millions of dollars. You know, just a regular man who can drink and eat is happier than him. And that billionaire, and he doesn't have enough, you know, like his wife is no good for him anymore, and he's looking around for someone better. Is it happiness? Oh my God, what's going on? Money, of course, in this meaning is evil, isn't it clear? But money can be good. Can it be good? Of course. When money is not a goal in itself, when a person can help others by means of this money, because there is an amazing thought by one of our saints, John Chrysostom. He was just an amazing preacher who said, yours is only something that you gave away to others. Oh, how interesting it is. So only the things you gave away to others are yours. Because when I give someone something out of mercy, willing to provide help, this money becomes something that I do for my eternal life. So money becomes good indeed for a person. So you see, money can smell and cannot smell. You see, we can have a different attitude to money. But we should recognize and we should admit the following fact. It is very difficult when someone has a lot of money not to get corrupted. I'm sorry for saying it, but the person can go loose and can start falling apart. How? Morally. Not to start getting apart morally. It is so difficult. I remember myself reading the New Testament. I read the words by Apostle Paul. Those were amazing words when he said, I can live in poverty and I can live in abundance. And I thought, wow, how strong indeed. Indeed, one should be able to live with dignity and not to lose our dignity in poverty or in abundance. Because it's not for nothing that abundance is often disapproved in gospel, because a person starts falling apart. So it's so easy here to fall apart because it's hard to resist and to become a decent person and to become to remain humane when you have a lot of money. So that's what I can say. Maybe you have some secret ideas in your questions, but you didn't open up. One lately, like the last 70 years, we don't have many sayings. I don't understand why. Like the last 30 years, we are falling down and down, and we don't have these saint authorities. We have less and less people of the kind, such personalities. Why is it happening? It's not just in Russia, it's all over the world. Those people are less and less often happening. So why? One person was asked this sort of a question. Why we don't have the saints? The answer was, there are no saints because there are no disciples. What do I mean? There are no people who would listen to these saints and who would follow them. Sometimes we do listen, but when it comes to our life, then stop. So there are no disciples, there are no people who would be able to follow these saints. That's why it is happening. I'm just talking about an obvious fact, because it is interesting. There was John from Kronstadt, and why there is no more person of a kind, or like saints from Optin Monastery or Seraphim from Sarov, where are they? It just seems to us that if right now Antony the Great came here to us, we would all become saints like him. But no, that's what terrible. You know, that's what is terrible. It's not true. We're able to do anything, to do any work, to do any research, anything. But inside our souls, we can't even fight and overcome the smallest passion. Can we overcome our vanity or our greediness? Or our lust, or, you know, try not to overeat when we have a table plenty of everything. Wow, it's impossible, you know, someone can do it, but I can't, you know. So we see some degradation, we face degeneration. In my personal opinion, but it's just my personal opinion, there are no authorities here, that in the same way as every person who is born has the term of their life encoded in their genes, they can get killed, of course, but there is a life term encoded in genes, meaning the biological life. In the same way, somewhere still deeper, in our genetic system, there is the term of humanity existence encoded. You know, sometimes we see such great power that falls apart a few centuries later. So I believe we face degeneration of humanity. And it is obvious if we take a look at what? Just guess, you will never guess. If we take a look at ourselves, what can I do? I can work. I can do many things. When it comes to my soul, here I'm so weak. It's amazing what's happening to me. I can't help telling someone else about my neighbor. Wow, he is a terrible person. I wonder, what do you care I mean, sometimes there is a reason to tell, but when I shouldn't care, I will tell about the drawbacks of all the people I know to all the rest of the people I know. So don't do it. Don't hurt yourself with the knife. Don't judge people, you know, with evil and being glad about it. So don't talk about someone else's drawbacks. So we've become so weak. It's some sort of a degeneration of humanity. But the believers in church, did they come from Mars or something? No, they are the same boys and girls. You know, some of the people made sure, some of the people believe traditionally. You know, some people say today, I'm Orthodox, but I don't believe in God. So there is nothing to be surprised about. Here is the reason. There is the general degeneration. It's going on all over the world. Do you know that nowadays statistics cause a terrible figure? I was so surprised that every 5 minutes in the world, one Christian is killed. It is amazing. There is a wave against Christianity, not against shamans or wizards or witches, no. It's against Christians all over the world. I was surprised to find out that it's happening in India, let alone the other Muslim countries, and there are huge restrictions in Europe. What's happening there? You can't wear a crucifix on a chain over your clothes. So there is a fight against Christianity. It is interesting. Of course, I will tell you. I will just tell you, you can believe me or not, it's up to you. Christianity is the only religion in the world that has the objective arguments in favor of the fact that it was revealed by God. It is God's revelation. So what I mean, the objective arguments mean that it's not just because I believe so, but they're objective. It is the only religion of the kind. You will never find any other religion with such arguments. I give lectures on this topic for almost the whole term, so there are many lectures that I give on this topic in order to understand this topic in detail. So I want to illustrate and to make it obvious for the students that Christianity is the true religion. So do you think it is so easy to pass an exam? No, it is not so easy. If a student tells me there is God, I say, come on, who's God? What came on you? I mean, proof. And all the students become so happy. And this pure student has to go through the execution. Well, now proof. So don't you think it is so easy to pass? And the same thing here. So you believe Christianity to be the true religion? What did you say? What are the grounds for it? But this is a large topic, you understand. I'm just saying. So it is the true religion, which means the religion which was revealed by God. And back to your question, there is some sort of a fight against God, the fight against everything holy.